Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast for Wednesday, July 29th, and I'll run down our news to start things off, our store news. We have some stuff coming up in the distance.
Yes.
So in August, we will have our Ladies' Night is moving back to Monday for this month. It is going to be Monday, August 10th. It will be over at Palermo's Italian. Yep. Which Dave can vouch for.
Yep. I have had good experiences every time I've been there, and I think it'll be a nice little place for our group.
Yep. And we hope so, because the next night, Tuesday, August 11th, we'll be doing our Through the Woods Reading with Rogues there.
So hopefully we won't get into any sort of blood feud with them.
Right.
Because then that'll be awkward.
That'll be awkward. but looking forward to having people discuss Through the Woods. If you have not picked it up, it is 15% off this month and is a good little horror read.
Yep. Yep. It's our... We're a little early for October scary stuff, but ballpark.
It's Halloween in August.
That's right.
You know what's scary? Death Heat. then there's Monday, August 17th. We'll be doing Gaming with Rogues. We're doing Red Dragon Inn this time. And to be decided. We haven't got the place just yet. So we're looking at a couple places.
Keep your eyes on this space.
Yes. Watch the skies. Because we're going to skywrite it.
That'd be cool.
For all you know, I mean, we don't know. It's possible. And then coming up...
What if we just told people we did? It's like you missed it.
You missed it. You didn't see it?
It's, how would they know?
It was in the skies.
Nobody films that.
Everybody films everything now, Dave.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Saturday, September 26th. Looking further ahead, we are having our Batman Day, which last year was a really big thing. They had masks and stuff. This year, the big giveaway is the first part of Batman Endgame. Along with some, I think some other preview art in that. It's a little freebie issue.
There's the first issue of Endgame plus a new story that's going to be the first of the Batman and Robin Eternal.
Right.
It's written by James Tynion and I forget.
Well, he's like show running. He's writing that issue, but the actual series is going to have writing by Tim Seeley and some of their Batman writers.
That's their weekly?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's sort of like their Batman Eternal.
And what's Endgame, though? Remind me.
Endgame was the big Joker storyline.
Oh, okay. Right. So it'll be a reprint.
It's a reprint.
Of the first issue.
Right.
That you know, has the Justice League in it.
That's a good first issue.
It is.
Yeah. So that'll be free with any purchase on that day, and we'll probably do a sale on Batman graphic novels, maybe do some other stuff. We're still looking at options because it is still a month and a half away. And then even further out, Saturday, October 31st, actually on Halloween this year, we'll be having our Halloween Comics Fest, which is sort of Free Comic Book Day 2. A bunch of sort of horror and Halloween-themed giveaways.
Often all ages.
Yeah, but not always. I think the Archie Sabrina, I think, is one of the giveaways
also,
this year.
I think Junji Ito's.
Junji Ito has a
it's kind of hilarious that a Sabrina issue is not an all-ages
very book. Much not.
But yes, if you've, for any who've been reading the very excellent current Sabrina series, you know, not all-ages.
Yeah, and we'll have some comics to give away this year, and that should be fun. Again, there may be more, there may be less, it depends. Halloween is a tough day to schedule for because some of us have to go trick-or-treating with our kids.
Yeah. I don't have kids, but I have to go trick-or-treating.
Yeah, Dave has to go trick-or-treating.
For me.
Random kids.
I have to go trick-or-treating with Randy as my chaperone.
All right, Davey, are we ready to go to house to
house? No!
Dave, put your costume on.
I don't want to be a pirate.
all right, so moving on to the news for the week. There is a lot of TV news again. It seems like the TCAs, the Television Critic Association, are having their upfronts for the fall, so all that stuff's coming out. Uh-huh. Plus, there's still stuff leaking out
when
from San Diego.
Upfronts, is this like their preview copies?
Yeah, previews of the fall season.
I don't know the jargon.
So some stuff is leaking out from there. Key and Peele have announced that they're ending at season 5, their current season.
Yeah, I saw that. That was... Was that out of nowhere?
It's not unexpected. Comedy Central's known for like a year.
Yeah.
And there's always been... Those guys have been blowing up. They're doing a lot of voice work. They were in, Fargo. They're both doing a lot of other stuff.
And one of them was in the new Pitch Perfect.
Yeah.
Actually, it was in a ton of stuff.
It's actually
for 5 years?
5 years.
That does seem like a long time to be doing a project sort of like that. Or that is to say, I can understand thinking like, I want to try some other stuff.
It's a good run.
Yeah, 5 years for a sketch comedy show, I think is...
Well, they've had a lot of legendary bits. Even if you don't like watch the show, their stuff is going to have crossed. Whether it's like the Obama Anger Translator or the what is it, the East-West...
East-West Bowls, yeah. And the thing is, they haven't had a bad season.
Right.
Like, it's been good throughout, and this current season is great so far. I think they're 3 episodes in, So they're going out strong, and I'm always a fan of that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's definitely something to be said for it.
We have heard that Jessica Jones has been officially scheduled. Maybe they don't have they didn't give us a full on date, but they said fourth quarter 2015.
Yeah, they've said 2015.
So October, November, maybe we'll see. But that's exciting.
She headlines. Do we know anything about like what the threats are going to be? Other than we know Kilgrave is
Purple Man.
Be,
yeah,
and that'll be David Tennant, and he's probably going to be brilliant.
But no, we don't know a whole lot about it.
Yeah.
We also don't know how much guest starring is. Although they have very heavily hinted that maybe Daredevil or Luke Cage might
it
show
would make
up.
A whole lot of
we
sense.
Know Luke Cage is.
Yeah. So, Gotham has cast Michael Chiklis as their new Captain Nathaniel Barnes.
Yes.
I
don't think any of us are watching that to have any sense of what that means other than it's probably going to be a good actor addition to a bad show.
Yep.
There's a lot of good actors on that show.
Yeah, so...
I did watch the teaser for the new season of Gotham, and it's like, Rise of the Villains, and I'm like...
Well, I saw the kid who's playing like 12-year-old Batman is now saying he is going to be Batman in the course of Gotham. We're like, how? You're 12.
He's going to have a 12-year-old costume. He's going to have a bat costume as a 12-year-old.
You know how in the Silver Age they did lots of like, they would mine the hero's past.
They would
like,
show that Thomas Wayne was secretly Batman for a night at a costume party.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there was something like that. I know Byrne riffed on it in one of his Generations miniseries. Where Bruce dressed up as like the Flying Fox or something like that, some costume to thwart a robbery at a Halloween party or something like that, and this sounds just as strange as that.
Yep.
But you know, I don't have anything else to say.
No, you shouldn't be looking to Generations for any kind of inspiration. Really.
But I know we're in the minority. We have a lot of friends and stuff who are enjoying Gotham.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you're enjoying Gotham.
I don't know that I know a lot of people enjoying it. I know some folks who are kind of like, yeah, it's cheesy, or yeah, it's kind of crappily written, but I like it.
I've heard people say it's great.
Now, is this sort of the same thing that we had when we walked out of the Star Wars Episode 1 where we tried to convince ourselves?
No, these are people who are like, no, it's gotten a lot better.
You can't watch like 20 episodes and still be trying to convince yourself at that
stage.
Sure
you can.
Well, it's a lot of people to be doing it, though.
Yeah. No, there are people who legitimately like what Gotham is doing. I am not one of them.
I'm going to call it cognitive dissonance.
Okay, moving on to a show we actually more or less like, although I think Dave is not caught up, and I don't know if Nick is. What? You and I are both sort of mediocre on Arrow.
Yeah.
Season 3 was weaker.
Right. It was definitely weaker. It was fun enough.
But, like, the show itself, you have liked quite well at times.
Quite a lot. And I like Stephen Amell, and I like the nods toward Green Arrow they're doing. I like it when it crossed over with Flash.
Here's the thing. I love the cast.
Yeah.
I think all cast individually are fantastic.
Yeah.
It's the writing that was a little uneven last season.
I think that's generally true. They have cast an actor I don't know, Jimmy Akingbola, I think is his name, as Baron Ryder, a.k.a. Baron Blitzkrieg, who's going to be leader of the Shadow Spire, which is an organization that was Deadpool was related to at some point.
Deadpool, Deathstroke.
Yeah, they're same.
I mean, they are.
Deathstroke was involved with in the comics, presumably will be in the show, too. Here's the weird thing. Baron Blitzkrieg is very much a Nazi.
He's one of those Nazi supervillains, kind of like the Red Skull.
Yeah, and Jimmy Akingbola is very much a black man.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird cast. And they've talked, like Mark Guggenheim, one of the writers of the show, one of the producers, talked about it and said they're basically just using the name. But I'm not sure that that's a name you want to use. It seems weird to me.
It does.
They're not even using Baron Blitzkrieg.
Baron Ryder. And here's the thing. If you're going to, I mean, I understand making nods. That makes a certain amount of sense. But, like, it would kind of be like whatever the real name of Captain Nazi is.
Yeah.
Just name a character that and be like, well, he's not actually a Nazi or a captain. We're just using the name. And I'm like, why are you using the name?
Yeah, you want to get some kind of, even if, like, you know, say you used Kirk Langstrom in Gotham.
Yeah.
And he wasn't Man-Bat in it. He was just a scientist or whatever.
That'd be okay.
It's like, you know, or even, yeah, just a researcher somewhere.
Yeah.
A bat specialist.
A bat specialist.
Whatever.
But say Kirk Langstrom was a race car driver. It'd be a little weird.
Right.
It's not making anybody happy. I mean, you're not making the fans happy because that's not what they want. And you're not making the casual people happy because they don't know what that means.
Right. If they decide to try and get in, you know, on the fanish side, and I know some people will be like, oh, I'm going to go look this up in Wikipedia or whatever, and I'm going to find out who these characters are so I can maybe read a comic or I'll just know more. well, you're going to get this bizarre story about a Nazi.
Well, it's also, this is the same season that's going to have a character named Damien Dark spelled horribly.
That said, they've had a guy named Merlin for, you know, three seasons.
But Merlin's an actual character.
Damien Dark, I don't think name.
Is a dopey ass
name. Because isn't his name like Max Merlin or...
it's something Merlin, yeah.
Malcolm.
Malcolm Merlin, yeah. Malcolm
Merlin. It's a dumb name.
It's a dumb name.
Here's the thing. I think any of those, including the Dark name... could be fine as in presentation.
Yeah.
The deal is with a lot of those kind of slightly silly sounding names is as long as the characters don't chuckle about it a whole lot, present it seriously, make him a badass, he'll still be cool.
Yeah. It's just a little weird.
But yeah, the Blitzkrieg one is very bizarre.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, there's we've got the news that Mark Hamill is going to officially... We talked about this last week, I think, that he was sort of angling for this job.
Right. He mentioned it like on Twitter, and he kind of was even, like I said, he's like, get it trending.
And DC wisely took him up on it. So Mark Hamill is going to be the voice of the Joker in Killing Joke.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, we have... There's some question of how well you can translate a story as dark and serious as Killing Joke to animation, which is... You know, surely going to action it up a bit.
Yeah.
But
well, Bruce Timm's involved, and that's good. Mm-hmm. The thing is, if they won't do this, I don't think. I think he may have retired from doing this voice. But if they get Kevin Conroy to do the Batman in that and make it sort of a unofficial adjunct to the animated series.
Right. Well, you know, the Killing Joke feels like it could be a finale.
Yeah.
And if you believe Grant Morrison's interpretation, which is by no means the official It is a finale. Then that would be amazing. Yeah. So you would be able to sort of do, you know, obviously there's going to be more Batman cartoons and stuff like that. But, you know, you could kind of get all the cast together for one last hurrah.
That'd be amazing. I mean, to have that happen to the Barbara Gordon of the animated series is more heartbreaking than anything.
Yeah.
But maybe he could miss. I don't know. Maybe not. Although to have, because see, then the heartbreak would be, oh, we could have had an animated series with Oracle.
Well... Is it possible they could do something like a Birds of Prey, you know, animated movie?
Oh, I would kill for a Birds of Prey animated movie.
Because, you know, if only on a marketing perspective, I think diversity is selling better now than it has in the past. Birds of Prey has a strong pedigree.
Yep.
Not as a TV show, but lots and lots of good comics.
Yeah.
So, anyway, just a thought. Oracle could be...
And here's the other thing. They've translated dark material for the animated series before. They did Harley Quinn's origin.
Right.
What's that called?
Mad Love.
Mad Love. They did Mad Love in the comics because they said at the time, I think it was Dini said at the time, that, you know, there's no way we could do this in the show.
Right.
And then they found a way to do it.
Yeah. As I recall, they didn't really pull any of the punches from there.
No, it's still... So they can do darker material. And there are elements of Killing Joke that are uncomfortable. I mean, the whole thing that happened to Barbara is a problematic thing.
Right. But a fair amount of time is spent with the Joker singing creepy songs at Commissioner Gordon while he views pictures of his shot daughter.
Yeah.
And there's also his weird little dwarf bondage people that are like his servants.
You know, that actually fits with the animated series ethos too. They always had the weird, they had Baby Doll and Toy Man and the animated Superman. They had the weird looking people. You know, it sort of makes sense.
I think it's possible they could pull it off. I suspect it's going to still feel to me like something of a misfire. Like they won't be able to handle it. I mean, you know, because, you know, Brian Boland and
Alan Moore.
It was like sort of a perfect wedding of story and art on that one.
Yeah. And also, the thing is, without Paul Dini, I think Tim and Dini together, Dini has his weaknesses, Tim has his weaknesses, and they sort of cover for each other.
Yeah.
But this is only Bruce Timm. And I feel like that means you don't have someone on the other side to sort of balance it out. So, yeah, I'm cautiously interested because of Hamill's involvement.
Yeah.
And if they get Conroy, that will definitely get me to watch it.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'm super hopeful it's going
to
be great.
I have to know that all eyes are on them.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be great if it turned out to be great. I'm JLA Gods and Monsters released today, and I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, of course, but I'm looking forward to checking
released
that out.
Released where?
Blu-ray, instant video. It's all out today.
Okay.
All right, so moving into comics news. Well, first, sort of comics adjacent. We talked a little about Bloom County a few weeks back when it just started. That Brooke Breathitt had brought back Bloom County.
Yep.
And here's the weird thing. Isn't he just posting on his Facebook page?
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
It's a little weird.
He's not going through the syndicates.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't even have a website, web page that I know of.
I mean, have you looked for
it? I haven't double checked, but I've just seen it on his face. He's posting his pictures on his Facebook page.
I think so. I think that may be it. That's all I've seen.
I assume they're going to collect into hardcover when they're done. I mean, I know he's working with IDW on their stuff, and I'll definitely buy it at this point because the guy's still got it.
So here, yeah, that's the notable thing is that it's still really funny.
His thing with the anxiety closet where it was Donald Trump's Lhasa Apso and that it had been skinned to make his toupee.
Right. Clearly he was like more or less keeping it for its fur.
Yeah. It's the perfect blend of the sort of the absurdist comedy and sort of political satire that he's always done.
Well, you know, like Opus, he shows up and it's as if he's been asleep for 25 years.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he gets his taste of, you know, Trump's presidency and stuff like that, and he's panicking, and they're like, and he's like, well, he's like, it's gonna be okay, I'm just gonna go, you know, relax, kick back with this sequel to why can't I say it?
I don't know.
The book.
The Ghost of a Watchman.
I'm gonna go kick back with the sequel to Kill a Mockingbird and relax with one of the great heroes, Atticus Finch.
Yeah.
Like, should we tell him?
he's got his finger on the pulse still.
Yeah.
And then today's, of course, Steve Dallas is back.
Yes.
And of course, in today's internet culture, Steve Dallas has put a picture of his penis singing on the internet.
Yes.
Accidentally. Because he was trying to text it to his girlfriend.
Yep.
I mean, that is perfect Steve Dallas.
You know what's cool? The art is great.
It looks, it's fantastic.
It looks exactly as good as it ever did, maybe even a little bit more polished, mm-hmm. I guess I'd say. But it essentially is a precise continuation of it.
Yeah.
You know, so if anybody who is listening to this who enjoyed Bloom County in the, 70s and 80s?
80s and 90s.
Yeah. Definitely go friend Burke Breathed on, or Berkeley Breathed, on Facebook and check it out.
Finally, one bit of comics news. We talked about the Star Wars single issues being sort of the highest ordered comic of all time. For a long time. Well, the Star Wars collection, the Volume 1 orders have come in, and it is 225,000, which
I saw this mentioned the other day.
Marvel's direct sales manager, David Gabriel, mentioned is about five times their usual sales for a first volume.
Is it essentially like close to the sales for the single issue?
No, the single issue was like a million.
Yeah. Okay. So not that high.
But 225,000 is crazy high.
Yeah. Well, I'm planning to pick it up.
Me too. Well, I'm holding out for hardcover. Because I've loved the Star Wars books so much. We'll talk about that when we get to the comic section. But this is, I mean, it's nice to see something done well and rewarded with good sales and to be good.
Yep.
So gives us hope that maybe the Star Wars movie is going to pull it off.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. All right. That's about it for news this week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about comics for this week. So before we get to comics of the week, a quick announcement. Nick had to run out and take care of some stuff, so he has not just become super quiet.
It's just me and Randy here, and a puppet that we've put in place of Nick.
That's right.
And we'll periodically be talking for him.
That's not going to happen.
Okay, maybe not. I don't think I want to do that voice either. But we have Nick's pick set
aside,
We can speak for him, just not in a puppet.
Well, and Nick's pick was one of the picks I was going to take, so I'll probably just go ahead and start. We'll start with that because we just left off talking about, and that is Star Wars number 7. This is the first issue not done by John Cassaday. John Cassaday was the artist for the first 6 issues.
But still written by?
This is still written by Jason Aaron. He is still on board the book.
Yep.
And the art on this is by Simone Bianchi, who is a guy who I've somewhat liked, but he usually does sort of a painty style. It's not always super clear.
Right.
But his work here is great.
Yeah, I think it's some of his most approachable art. And he's always been a good draftsman.
Yeah.
It's just that, sometimes his style, I think, somewhat subsumes the storytelling.
But for those who have been liking it and liking John Cassaday, I think you will not be disappointed by the change of art here.
No.
And, of course, Stuart Immonen will come on with issue 8 and do the next arc, and that will be amazing. But this is a one-shot story. You can pick it up even if you haven't been reading the current Star Wars book, and if not, why not? That's crazy. It's the best. It's so good.
It's super good.
But this is about the sort of a story we haven't really seen that I don't think between Ben Kenobi sort of after the Revenge of the Sith,
yep.
Where he's gone to Tatooine,
but before
New Hope.
Yep.
Sort of him, how does he deal with not being a Jedi anymore and trying to become a recluse and, you know, watching sort of these injustices go on around him.
Right. Last we saw in the movies, you know, essentially on that and then on the Clone Wars cartoon, which is, I believe, canonical for Lucas purposes, he's like very active. You know, he's a very kind of outgoing Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of the tut-tut teacher to Anakin.
Well, he's also, he's a general and one of the Jedi Council.
Yeah. But, you know, he's in sort of unique circumstances. Essentially, all of his friends are dead.
Yeah, and he murdered one of them.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do. So, yes. So, indeed, what happened with him between, you know, that that character and the sage-like sensei he becomes in A New Hope?
Yeah.
Slash hermit.
Right.
And this story reveals it.
It also sort of begs the question of, what was he doing to protect Luke all this time? And they address that as well.
Right.
The only thing I wish we could have seen a scene between him and Uncle Owen where they sort of talk about Luke. Like, I would have loved to have seen this expanded into more story.
Right.
I would have loved to have seen this expanded. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's sort of passed over. But the upside of that is that it's a good, quick, one-shot story that really gets in, gets out, tells the story very effectively.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of an interesting notion of a Jedi who really wants to, you know, use his abilities but absolutely can't without jeopardizing Luke.
Right.
And the sort of the conundrum it puts him in where and how he finds ways to take action.
Yeah. No, it's a great issue. I actually liked it as much as any of the previous ones, and it's a good standalone. So, really good stuff. That's my cheater pick, because that's Nick's pick. My pick is Sex Criminals number 11, which comes back after its hiatus.
It's in a bag this week.
Okay, they bagged all of them. Here's the deal. There are some of them, and we didn't know this when we ordered, so unfortunately we may run a little low on Sex Criminals this week, but there are 10 copies we've got that are a Brian Lee O'Malley of Scott Pilgrim and Seconds, triple X cover, not safe for work. On the poly bag, it says NSFW, NSFH, NSFFA, OMG. You can work out for yourself what all those means. I'm not really sure. It is also, instead of the $350 cost, it is $469. Get it? Do you get it? That's all printed on the poly bag.
Yeah.
So it is a little bit more expensive, but it do have a nice Brian Lee O'Malley cover.
Well, I mean, you know, Brian Lee O'Malley is a very talented artist.
Yeah.
I can only assume Brian Lee O'Malley drawing boobs or dong will still be an appealing sight.
Yeah. I'm wildly curious. I just I don't buy this book in single issue for the most part, so I couldn't make myself do it.
We haven't seen it yet.
We haven't seen it. We don't know. Yeah. But we do have the regular covers. Well, it is also poly bagged, and the reason for that is that Chip Zdarsky and Matt Fraction flew up to Canada where they print the book and randomly signed a bunch of these issues. So in theory, any issue you buy could come with a signature of the creator team, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's polybag every issue so nobody can look through it cool.
But it's something.
At any rate, through Image, I do have a chance to read this stuff ahead of time sometimes, and I did get a chance to read this issue. Number 11 starts to introduce us to more, I guess, sex criminals, the people who can orgasm and go into the quiet or cum world or whatever you want to call it.
The precise encapsulation
and, of it. And they introduce us to a new guy whose name is Maname, and it's pretty great. They also sort of start digging into a little bit of what the sex cops are doing to try and track them down. There's also
one of the series' big mysteries.
Yeah. There's also a lot of just great stuff with John and Susie and sort of their relationship. They're also going over to John's, I think it's someone that he was friends with or someone like that who they introduced an issue or two ago. And they're sort of expanding the cast, and it's working really well. I'm liking it a lot. And then there's that letter column. the reason to buy this in single issues is the letter column's amazing. It's got their goofy sex tips on top.
Yep.
And then it's got letters of readers writing in about their crazy sex adventures, their first time, every kind of sex topic under the world. And then they take everything from a serious to a funny answer to it. And it really is like it's just a great column. It's really interesting. It's fun.
Yeah. It's like coming in on a really funny and occasionally insightful conversation.
Yeah. it's really, really great.
It's super dirty.
And very dirty and very funny. And sort of all the sense of humor that Matt Fraction and Brian O'Malley Chip Zdarsky. There's a panel, there's a sequence in here. One of the things Sex Criminals has done really well is like the big Queen sing along where like they didn't have the rights to the song and they sort of do a sort of meta thing in the middle of it.
They sang Fat Bottom Girls, but like blocked it all out.
there are four black panels in here with lettering. That is when a character goes into an Asian supermarket and Fraction says, look, here's where he goes to an Asian supermarket. And there's a reason I didn't do it, because you've seen Zdarsky. He would have done, like, a whole bunch of background gags in different languages. Do you know how many languages they speak in Asia? It's like 40. And he's like, so you just get these black panels. He went to an Asian supermarket, okay? It was really funny and just right on point with what this book does. It's good to have it back. Dave, what is your pick for this week?
My pick is a, like Nick's, well, this is kind of a callback week for all of us. We've been picking some of the titles that have been favorites in the past. This feeling slightly late to me. Was it like a week or two?
It is a little late. Secret Wars is running late, and so they've delayed some of the tie-in books. Mm-hmm. Although, as we talked about, we're not sure why, because
there's essentially self-contained.
Yeah, there's nothing going on in Secret Wars that's affecting
it. It's going to be in the wrap-up.
Yeah.
But anyway, the book is Thor's. Yep. This is Thor's number two. The first one was so good, and that's why maybe, you know, even just a delay of a week or two has kind of felt sort of long.
Yeah.
I've been really wanting to know what happened in the, basically, Asgardian cop comic.
Yep.
This week they continue the hook of the original, which is to overlay cop tropes on on the Asgardian tropes, beginning in this case with a funeral.
Yep.
And anybody who's ever seen a police movie or TV show has seen the dramatic fall of an officer, the somber speeches. But it's rare that they end with a bunch of Vikings holding up their hammers and calling for vengeance.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like...
Yeah.
What's amazing is that this juggles both those things at once.
It really does.
They're... I guess I won't say who the funeral is for, just in case you haven't read the first issue.
Right.
But they're going over the character's record, and it's the same way, you know, you would go over a cop's record and how they graduated and what their big busts were. And it's all this awesome stuff, from... either Norse mythology or Marvel stories. They mentioned the Xavier Rebellion, the different ranks he's gone through, and it's all awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is one of those books where almost every panel seems to have something cool in it.
This is a book where I kind of wish it was going to continue past Secret Wars. I know it can't. I mean, this is a situation to be really hard to continue, but I would love to see more stories of the Thors as cops.
Right. Yeah, presumably since Doom ultimately is where they get their power from, or who they serve, and that's a hyper Secret Wars specific thing.
Yeah,
it'd be hard for them for me to imagine how they might transfer it over.
Yeah,
but if in some way at the end of Secret Wars, if say Doom gets displaced, but you know some of these characters are given worlds that recreate what they know, but without Doom as commander,
right?
You know, I agree. I'd like to see them do something with it.
And we're only two issues in, so maybe it's a little too early to be asking for more. Sure. But maybe issue four, we're like, done.
That's
but profitable. So far, I'm really liking it.
This may be another get in and, you know, and get out while it's what leave them wanting more.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Thors go out looking for suspects. You get the classic shakedown sort of thing, where the cops are. Maybe pushing their authority a little bit too hard, and, you know, in the Vic Mackey on the Shield style.
Right.
But you know, if Vic Mackey was Thor. and then the final major cop trope that shows up in this one is the disgraced officer trope.
And that is so good.
It's a fantastic sequence. Yeah. Anyway, this is just... hey, who's the wolf one, Randy? There's a wolf Thor.
I don't know. I didn't know this character.
I wondered if it was supposed to be a version of... You know, because there's like a giant wolf in hell in Norse mythology.
Well, I wonder, is it Fenris? Is it supposed to be Fenris?
Yeah, there's Fenris. There's another wolf named Garm somewhere.
Oh, maybe it is. I don't know.
But usually they're super giant. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe Thor turned into a werewolf at some point. Maybe. They're all... Yeah. anyway, he looks cool.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away anything else in it other than Thor Frog does show up again. And is awesome. It continues to be like the funnest read of all of the Marvel Secret Wars books that I've been.
Yeah, I think at some point here we're almost to the point where they've released all the first issues. We're going to have to go through and do a ranking of sort of our top five Secret Wars tie-ins, but
I've had a few surprises, too.
This would be in my top five.
That, like, I seem to remember the not the Spider-Verse one.
But Spider-Island.
Spider-Island one.
That week. That was Spider-Island, Civil War, and 1872, all of which we all loved.
Yep. There's been some nice surprises in there.
Speaking of surprises, also on my pile this week are a couple other surprises from Secret Wars. MODOK Assassin number 3, which I liked and Nick loved, so he made sure I was going to mention that. But it's MODOK versus a bunch of other villains, and it's funny and dark and really entertaining, and stars an Angela who's a Thor that he's sort of fallen in love with, and
MODOK
is in love with her, yes. It's really fun. I'm shocked how good this has been. Also, similarly, I have no fondness for Age of Ultron or Marvel Zombies, really. But the Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies story is really good. It opens this issue with a Solomon Kane-esque Punisher.
Yeah, and that just seems like a perfect idea. Solomon Kane, is like the grim sword-wielding Puritan of Robert E. Howard stories.
Yeah.
A perfect mapping on character for the Punisher.
I'm sure he's the 1602 Punisher. I'm sure that's where he comes from.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because they seem to get thrown over the wall with regularity.
Right.
but there's also, in this fight, and I think the artist on this is Steve Puke, who I've never been super impressed with, but who's killing it here. He does a lot of great background gags.
I've seen times when he has killed it before. He's been really good at times. He's a little
great here. This reminds me of what Sean Phillips did with Marvel Zombies. He's got, in the background, he's got like... old Iron Man foes like Unicorn. I see Princess Python, Cobra, Porcupine,
nice.
Scorpion, Mandrill, Manbull, all these sort of obscure villains. And they're just there to get cut apart by the Punisher.
But instead of just being sort of random, generic characters, they're specific.
Yep. But the heart of the story is about what we saw at the cliffhanger of the final issue last time, which is all the sort of Hank Pym, Ultron tie-in characters together. They've created sort of a sanctuary, which is Wonder Man, the original Human Torch, Vision, and then the Hank Pym from 1872, sort of an inventor. And it's really good. I love what they do. They sort of explain how they create their sanctuary and why they need Hank Pym. And meanwhile, there's some stuff going on with Ultrons and zombies. And this is a really good story. I'm surprised how much I'm enjoying it.
I need to read that one. That one sounds fun. And I tend to like the ones that are a little... kind of contained like that.
I am almost sure you would dig this story. Yeah. Yeah. We have the penultimate Mark Waid Daredevil with...
It's his deal with the devil stuff continues to play out. His deal with the Kingpin.
Kingpin's in here. Shroud's in here. That new bad guy Ikari that he introduces in here.
Whenever Ikari shows up, he's always scary.
He's scary. There's a lot of great sort of manipulations going on. There's sort of a chess game of sorts going on between Kingpin and Daredevil as they try to get one up on each other. And, of course, that amazing Chris Samnee art. This run has been one of the best runs Daredevil's ever had, and that's high praise indeed. And it looks to be going out strong.
Yep. One more issue, right?
One more issue. Yep. Yeah. Then we've got S.H.I.E.L.D., also by Mark Waid. Art by Paco Medina this time. And I'm a bit of a mark for this one because it is a Mockingbird story, and I love Mockingbird. She's one of my favorite characters. And it's Mockingbird and Agent May going with an underground operation that's basically operating on kids to give them superpowers and then selling them into slavery, basically.
Creepy.
So there's some child slavery elements going on there. There's sort of black market drug type thing going on.
Mark Waid's dabbled in some serious stories like that with like he did in Daredevil. Some like a year or two back.
Yeah.
But it seems like good fodder for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Probably go slightly darker espionage type themes.
This is one of those issues where I read it and I'm like, oh, I want more. I want more S.H.I.E.L.D. I want more Mockingbird. And I thought he just perfectly nailed what I like about the character. So if you like me or are a fan of Mockingbird, or if you're liking the show and like their take, this is a pretty great action-y issue that's all standalone. It doesn't tie in anything else.
Yeah, so far in general, every issue of S.H.I.E.L.D., although they do... advances of a larger story has been self-contained.
Yeah. Yeah, the first arc all ties together in a sort of a mystical bad guy thing, mm-hmm. but you don't need to know that to read each issue individually.
You can pick up one based on if you like the characters in it or you just
or the artist.
The book. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping that whoever takes over S.H.I.E.L.D. in the relaunch is going to be good. I don't remember who it is, but Wade S.H.I.E.L.D. has been great for me.
It's not like Tom Taylor or anything.
No, it's not Tom Taylor. He's doing something else. He's doing Wolverine. Okay. Yeah, he'd be interesting. Finally, I've got some Image books, the latest issue of Wayward and Copperhead, both of which I really, really enjoy. Dave, what do you got? Anything else in your stack?
Yeah, I have a few other things. There's the latest issue of Sabrina, which, is this a little bit more on schedule lately?
Number three, this is number four, right?
Yeah.
Number three came out, I think, like 6 weeks ago, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's... practically
it's closer to on time. Yeah.
Anyway, I haven't read it yet, but every issue I've read of this has been really good.
Macabre as hell.
Yes, it is. What are we thinking? The trade is probably going to have 5 issues?
5 or 6, I don't know which.
So yeah, probably can't be maybe like 4 or 5 months out from
the collection.
Yeah,
should be coming up on it. We do have every issue except the first one, and I believe the first one's going to be free at Halloween Comic Fest.
That'd be cool.
So,
There's some a couple issues of Batgirl this week that I want to check out.
Right.
There's a continuation of the thing with Livewire that began last issue, and there's also an annual that sort of, you know, the Batgirl that Cameron Stewart and Babs Tarr have been doing has been kind of isolated from the rest of the DC universe.
Yeah.
And here they seem to be sort of their annual this week seems to be trying to make up for that entirely through this annual. So there's a story that has a crossover, a meeting with Grayson. There's one with Spoiler, Batwoman, and I feel like I'm missing somebody in that.
Yeah, I thought there was somebody else too, but
anyway, it is and a bunch of good artists on it too. Oh, and also some of the characters from Gotham Academy.
Right.
Anyway, I haven't read this one yet, but flipping through it, I can see that there's a hugely talented array of artists, so should be some fun stuff to kind of finally get to see that character bounce off the other DC heroes. And lastly, there's the next issue of Superman that continues the sort of the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't read this fully yet, but it does in fact have the big reveal in it.
The big reveal?
That is to say, well, you know how he got outed, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's giving away anything because it's on the cover.
Yeah.
This is the issue where Lois finds out.
Oh, okay.
Now, exactly how it's the beans get spilled to the public hasn't been revealed yet. I have this feeling that they're going to do a thing where it was an intentional leak and they asked Lois to write the story so to get him out from under the thumb of blackmailers.
Right.
But we'll see on that one. Anyway, I like the previous issue, so hopefully this one will continue the goodness.
You know, my biggest issue with that is, and we were talking a little bit before podcast started about secret identities, that maybe they're an outdated concept, that maybe we need to sort of get away from them. But how do you put that genie back in the bottle? If you decide that, oops, we really do want Clark Kent and Superman people not to know, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
It is.
Without using some crazy mind control machine.
That reboots about every 5 years.
I guess you're right. They can just, the next crisis, they can fix it.
Although there was a thing that actually came out like today or yesterday where Dan DiDio said that something like they'd like to never do a reboot again.
Sure, I'm sure they would.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll see. We'll see. I know that they were also talking about having, having their core books have sort of a tight continuity, and then sort of other tiers of books that have looser continuity where they really won't worry about it too much. But that's kind of always been how comics have worked.
Yeah.
There's always been stuff on the fringes, whether it's like Howard the Duck or She-Hulk or something like that, where they don't worry about how making every little piece fit.
Right, right.
We'll see. But yeah, I do wonder about the secret identity thing. I feel like, you know, one of the frustrations in the first season of The Flash was him withholding it from Iris.
Yeah.
And, they have to do that same old trope, you know, where Superman would lie to Lois all the time because he'd have to go save the world, and he'd break dates and all this stuff, and it would be frustrating for everybody.
Yeah.
And it just seems like, you know, if you really care about somebody, maybe you want to let them in on it.
Go ahead and trust them.
Yeah. And I understand the concept of, you know, they have to protect their loved ones. Part of that, I think, almost feels like a meta thing for, you know, how it used to be sort of juvenile power fantasies.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that you had this secret great other side to you, but you just couldn't show anybody, and it was for their own good.
Yeah,
You know, it sort of fulfills a sort of a wish fulfillment thing maybe there, or it romanticizes sort of the lonely life of an angsty teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe it's time for that trope to grow up a little bit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, even with just a little realism, if people did know, you know, if you were a superhero and they knew who your loved ones were, why wouldn't they go after them?
Right, sure.
So that's why I kind of like what they've done on the Flash TV show ultimately, which is he has a circle of people who know and generally, but the public at large doesn't.
Well, there's benefits to keeping the identity secret, but I think a more sophisticated take on it where you don't lie to your loved ones for the sake of drama.
Right.
Like, there's
because
plenty
that's what
of
it
drama.
Feels like a lot of times it feels forced.
Yeah.
Everybody groaned every time in season one of Flash when he's like was about to tell Iris and he's like I can't or whatever.
Well, going back to when JMS revealed Peter Parker's identity to Aunt May.
Yeah.
That was a great story and it made a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're back to her not knowing and her looking a little stupid.
Also, like probably a decade ago now, Bendis, who We have to grudgingly admit was one of the people who...
Oh, he hates UWs. Yeah.
Who has been pushing for this for a while.
Yeah.
He did a really good issue where Peter Parker revealed his secret identity
to Mary Jane.
Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Most of the... I think almost the entire issue sort of took place in the room with just the two of them talking. And it was a really interesting, far-ranging conversation, very emotional. And it did feel like, you know... You have to tell those sort of things. That's how secrets get out.
I mean,
but it's also like what people are.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what kind of bugs me about it is like the notion that you would keep it secret from basically everybody.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
It's a little hard to buy now.
I think that's why it just feels frustrating to watch sometimes. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know that the Superman one is going to ultimately be a great example of doing it right.
Right.
But we have seen stuff like Flash and Arrow where they have sort of their groups of people who know, and it's most of their loved ones.
Right, right. All right, well, that will wrap up our comics talk for the week. We'll be back in just a few minutes where I'm going to talk for a long time about TV, and Dave's going to nod at me.
Yep.
All right, so before we get to TV talk, we did have some new games come in this week, all of which I'm picking up, and so we're going to talk about them. first of all, the DC deck building game, which Dave will probably mention a little bit later. There's a two-player version we didn't talk about yet.
Right, right.
But there's a crossover pack, which is a little pack of just a handful of cards.
You sprinkle into one of the bigger games.
Yeah, it's got 5 superheroes and 22 game cards you mix in. And it is Arrow, so it's from the TV show. So I'm sure the characters you mix in are – the characters you play are Diggle, Sarah Lance, Oliver Queen, and then they've got like the explosive Arrow in there, and I'm sure Felicity's in there. It's kind of fun. It's an interesting mix with the comics universe.
Yeah, that seemed a little weird to me, and I was talking about this with Jose the other day.
Uh-huh.
And – He was saying that he kind of wished they had done a starter set that was a WB Heroes set.
Sure.
And, you know, so it would mix Flash and Arrow. It would give you lots of villains to play around with. But as it stands, it looks like they decided to do the smaller packs. I'm sure Flash will get one.
Yeah.
I still want them to do a big a starter set.
I would also like that, but... This is the first crossover pack I bought because we sold out of the JSA after I learned about the game.
Yeah.
And so at some point I'll get into it. But I like the idea of mixing more cards in. It's kind of a fun change of mechanic.
Yeah.
Also, there are 2 new Firefly expansions, the Firefly game, which we've talked about a couple times. They are the Esmeralda and the Jetwash. They're just new ships. They come with a ship counter, a dice, a couple new crew members, and some new equipment that all goes into the mix. And it looks like maybe also a leader card, a story card. Basically, it's just a small expansion. The Esmeralda, and the big thing with this is that it adds more players.
Oh, really?
So basically, you know, the game tops out at 4 players.
It doesn't? I forgot. I thought it was supposed to have been 5 or 6.
Tops out at 4. But you can buy the add-ons. There's the Artful Dodger that you can buy, which has been out for a little while, that adds a 5th player. With this, you get up to 7 players.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. The Jetwash is a Firefly, but it's named after Wash, Jetwash. So it's named after the late Hoban Washburn.
Yeah,
and I guess
his full name is hard to say.
It's a faster ship. It looks like, and then the Esmeralda is the perfect ship for discreetly carrying people who don't want to be found by to places they don't want to be followed. Is what it says.
So more stealthy.
So ship, maybe? Maybe a little more stealthy. Maybe has a special ability of some kind, but. Like I say, there are 2 new captains included here, so...
Well, it sounds like you get a lot of kind of fun stuff, you know, along with your ship.
So it looks to me like the Jetwash has Zoe as captain.
Oh, okay.
So she can be a captain on the ship now.
That's cool.
Which is pretty cool. There is no leader card for the Esmeralda. It's just a ship. But the Jetwash is a sort of a specific ship. I guess Zoe gets off the Serenity and takes her own ship that she names after her husband. It's kind of neat.
That is cool.
If you've been playing the Firefly game, it's a way to add more players or add some variety. And I've been buying all the Firefly expansions. I have heard from friends that when you add all the expansions in, the game becomes a lot longer.
Yeah, one would imagine.
But I haven't actually played with all the expansions. I just like occasionally if you have extra people come and you need more room, then
you got the option to do 5 or 6 people would be nice.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily see having to run it up to 7, but it's nice to know you can.
Yeah. But so that's kind of cool. And there's also one other game that I'm not picking up necessarily, but it's called Adorable Panda Ring, as in Panda Ring.
Yes.
And it's pandas.
With literal pandas.
There's pandas and bamboo, and reminds me of Takenoko a little bit, but it's a card game.
It seems like the goal in this is to out-cute the other pandas in it. And win bamboo.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, it sounded fairly adorable. I posted some their description of it. Their own description of it on the back of it was kind of hilarious, and it's on our Facebook page where I linked to it yesterday, as well as a picture of a few of the cards.
Right. okay.
Which includes, by the way, a breakdancing panda.
So before we get to TV, Dave, let's talk about DC deck building Batman versus Joker.
Yeah. Since we have been having so much fun with the DC deck building games recently, the one that we hadn't tried yet was the two player variant,
right?
And I decided to go ahead and pick that one up, gave it a spin, and taught the basics of the game to my brother last weekend, and had a lot of fun with it. This is it's called like Rivals, Batman versus Joker. And for those of you who've played the DC deck building game before, all the basic core mechanics are there. So it's relatively, simple. You have the lineup of five cards to buy from, but instead of defeating supervillains that are out there sort of beside the lineup, you try to defeat each other, and so you have three cards representing Batman or the Joker at various different levels of strength.
Okay.
Like a 9.1, a 12.1, and like a 15.1 or something.
All right, sure,
like that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat. This is one of the only new mechanics that it's major new mechanics to it. You have occasionally you'll begin a turn and you'll say I'm starting a confrontation. You'll try and take down their card, which is of course worth lots of points at the end of the game.
Sure.
Beat them.
Yeah.
And you will begin putting down your cards and see if you can, including definitely sometimes without having all the points you need straight away. But, you'll get to draw more cards as you go, and
right.
A lot of cards let you draw more cards or draw from the lineup or whatever. And if you do get enough to, once you have it all out there, at least enough to otherwise beat the card, then they get to respond in this one, which is something we haven't seen in the other ones.
Yeah.
And there are cards that you can play in there that will allow you to make your cost higher. You could play like, the Batman's Cowl, and it'll... or the grappling hook, I think, which adds two to your character's hit points, essentially.
Right, sure.
Makes them harder to take down.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we had some fun face-offs like that. You don't know you're going to win, even if you've got the points to beat him.
Right.
And so you can have a little more back-and-forthing. As it happens, I was playing the Joker, and I got a lot of nasty poison cards.
Yeah.
And I was poisoning him at every opportunity, so that in the end he had like 9 weakness cards in his deck, which really weighed it down because he didn't have a lot of stuff to block my special attacks.
Right.
But that said, it was overall a pretty close game. It was a lot of fun, and I think it's a good way to sort of teach the game to people. People are always looking for good 2-player games.
Right. Yeah.
Since we already know the basics of the DC deck building game are cool. It'd be one where if you like, you could try it out. If you like it, then you can easily graduate into some of the other DC games.
Oh, that's very cool. So I've mentioned before on this podcast that I do other podcasts.
Oh, my God. Again, Randy?
Yep, sorry. You got to promote, Dave. Got to cross-promote.
Oh, okay.
So next week I'll talk about my gaming one because the Rat Queens thing is going up.
Sure, why not?
But this week...
Why don't you join another podcast, Randy?
I will. I actually did record some movie commentaries for one of us. Now you say that. So,
Before you continue, speaking of podcasts, we should throw a shout out maybe later on to the Running Scared podcast that we both listen to.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Junk Food Cinema,
okay.
Which is, I don't know what the site is. It's not oneofus.net. It's one of the guys I know from there.
Yeah.
But it's Brian Salisbury from oneofus.net and Robert Cargill, who you might know as the writer of Sinister.
Sinister,
yeah,
correct. Yeah,
and maybe probably, Insidious. Did he write Insidious?
Or I don't think so.
Okay, well he's written some movies,
and he's got another big one coming up. And Sinister's good movie.
And he used to write for Ain't It Cool News, and so the two of them do a podcast called Junk Food Cinema, where they talk about sort of maybe B movies or not even B movies, but
kind of cult or fringe movies.
Yeah. And they did one on Running Scared, not the Paul Walker thing from a few years back, but the
80s buddy comedy.
Yes, the 80s buddy comedy by Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines that we both loved.
Yep.
And
this is a really good appreciation.
It's great. They spend like an hour on it. They spend half the running time of the movie.
Yep. These guys who have a lot of film knowledge.
Yeah.
both talk about some fun insider stuff, like some of the other actors considered for the role.
Yep.
Because this is, you know, I'm trying to remember, why did they not go with the other ones? Were there scheduling issues?
I think, I don't know if they just, they didn't talk about that. They didn't necessarily know.
But like, what's one of the examples?
Well, the example was older guys, Gene Hackman and
Paul Newman,
right? Which would have been a very different movie.
Yeah, because, and you know, they are like trying to retire and get out of the cop biz.
Yeah.
And they're not like young pups,
yeah,
but they're not exactly old either. Like, Billy Crystal is probably like, what, 30, 35?
Yeah, they're in their
30s. Maybe.
He's 36 because there's, they ask him, no, Gregory Hines' character is 36 because in the candle, in the birthday scene, they ask him, he claims to be 34 and there's 36 birthday. Yeah. I know this movie by heart.
Yeah, you know better than I do.
It also has Jimmy Smits as a crime lord.
They have fond appreciations in the podcast.
They talk
that.
About the director, Peter Hyams, who did the movie Outland, among other things. Yeah. They talk about the music, which is amazing.
Right.
They talk about sort of whether the script was improv. It's just a great appreciation. So, and I'm going to go check out some of their other stuff for other movies.
And so, so say the name of the podcast.
Junk Food Cinema is the name of the.
I just pulled it up on my phone and you know, that day and listened to it, and it was a good hour's listening.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll throw a link up to it on our show notes so you can check it out.
Now you can talk about.
Can I talk about my podcast now?
Yes.
All right. So I've been doing for about 5 years a weekly podcast called The TV Dudes, which I would do with a couple other guys, Greg and Grant. And so I talk a lot of TV. And if you want to hear me talk about TV on the regular, we talk about it here a lot, but I talk about it more in depth and about a lot of shows over there. But the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about some stuff, and I wasn't caught up. So I haven't talked about these shows as much on TV Dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And those shows are Deutschland 83 and Penny Dreadful Season 1.
Which one is Deutschland?
Okay, so Deutschland 83 is a show that's currently running on Sundance. It's a German TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It's an 8-episode show. It's basically like The Americans. It's a East German border guard kid who's in his maybe early 20s.
Is it a period piece like that?
Yeah, it's in 1983.
Okay.
He's recruited by his aunt, basically almost against his will, to go and become this aide to a general in West Germany who's doing all these talks with NATO, and they want to find out about them putting Pershing missiles in Berlin if America's planning a first strike or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And he sort of goes over there, and he has to because his mom has I think, kidney issues, and the only way she's going to get an operation, get on the donor list in East Germany, is if he does this for them and gets a favor from the government.
Right.
So he goes over there. He leaves his girlfriend behind, and the general's son is sort of becomes a buddy of his, and the general's daughter is also has like you know, so her own stories, and it's basically this bit of spy paranoia, whereas this sort of amateur, quickly trained spy
mm-hmm.
has to do all this, you know, 80s spycraft, trying to get.
Conceptually, that sounds pretty interesting.
It's amazing. It's so good, and all the side stories are really interesting. I really liked the first episode,
mm-hmm.
but then I marathoned the last like four that are available right now, and I'm completely in love with the show.
Yeah.
It's got a little more of that coincidence than The Americans. Like he gets into and out of scrapes by luck, sort of bad and good luck.
Right.
And so it's a little bit contrived, maybe. But that said, The Americans is so precise, and it's about spies who've been training for this their whole lives. And this is a kid who had maybe like 6 weeks of intense training.
Right.
So it makes sense that there'd be a little more uncertainty to it.
Right. That sounds more immediate. You know, I haven't seen The Americans. That sounds slightly more appealing immediately, the notion of like having to pull off high level stuff without being fully prepared.
Yeah.
That's like my worst nightmare. That's like all my panic dreams of like school tests I didn't prepare for. And I'm like, I'm not even in school.
Well, it's like, you know, the best spy stuff is always stuff where somebody's like trying to pick a lock and someone's coming in through another door and you're not sure they're going to make it.
Right.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff. It's like the, how would you even have the balls to try this when you know you're how close you are to being caught?
Right. It's a German show, right?
It's a German show. It's entirely in German, all subtitled.
Okay.
There's maybe a little tiny bit of English spoken from an American general who talks a couple times, but it was filmed and shot and shown in Germany. So it takes your full attention. Like, I will half watch TV shows sometimes.
Right.
And the reason
I do that with subtitle shows.
The reason it's waited so long for me to watch is that this requires my undivided attention.
Right.
What did not require my undivided attention was a show that a lot of our fans like. I've talked to people who really love this, and it's Showtime's Penny Dreadful.
Right.
I am 6 episodes into the 8-episode season 1. It is it's not steampunk. It's Victorian. It's Victorian London
with some of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen's mashup of characters.
Yeah, so the lead character is or there are several lead characters. One of them is Timothy Dalton's playing an older explorer type, sort of a, you know,
Alan Quartermain
type, but basically he is Mina Harker's father.
Okay.
Mina Murray's father. He's something yep. Murray. And so he's sort of this old explorer type. Mina's been taken by Dracula, although we don't meet her until later.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a sort of surrogate daughter of sorts named Vanessa. Seems to be a medium. She can sort of – spirits can inhabit her. She right. had a childhood friendship with Mina. Mm-hmm. And they recruit an American cowboy who's very much a Buffalo Bill type. Like, we meet him in a Wild West show, but he's
right.
named something else. He's played by I'm blanking on his name. You'd know him. He was in one of the Sin City movies.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, and then they bring in Victor Frankenstein, who has created his Frankenstein's monster. And there's a twist in there, too,
mm-hmm.
Which I wasn't expecting. And it is all about them sort of trying to get Mina, who's been kidnapped by vampires.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing is, there's six issues in, and we still really haven't met Dracula yet.
And this is a 11-episode season?
Eight episodes. So they're clearly not going to resolve this in the first season.
Right.
And I feel like they spend – I mean, there's one where they spend 15 minutes watching a play.
Uh-huh.
And it's a play with all kinds of special effects. It's like the werewolf and a blood – you know, blood spurting and all this kind of stuff. And
yeah.
it's sort of – it's a little slow pace for me.
Right.
Huh. There's a little bit of...
Because conceptually it does not sound slow paced.
Yeah, but it is. It's uh-huh. it's like it takes a long time to get to things. And like they spend the fifth episode, I believe, is a lot of flashback to Mina and Vanessa's sort of childhood when they were sort of... It's called like, Closer Than Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about them and infidelity in the family and sort of their relationship. And it is interesting in that it sheds light on sort of the relationship that Vanessa and the lead character have, Dalton's character have.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it almost doesn't feel worth it. It's like it spends half an hour on something that uh-huh. I'm like, you probably could have covered that in 10 minutes better.
Right.
They've used, Oscar Wilde's, Dorian Gray is in this
yep.
too. And, he's sort of off to the side. Basically, no one seems to have particular agency, I think, is my issue with it.
That's
no one seems to be actually
yeah.
doing anything.
How's the acting?
The acting is pretty solid. The second episode has a seance, and Eva Green, who plays Vanessa, just kills it in that. I finally understood why people might be saying she should get an Emmy.
Uh-huh.
Like, she is great in this scene where she gets possessed by a spirit and sort of tells off this whole seance group and
uh-huh.
sort of acts weird and spooky, and it's great.
Okay.
And, you know, Timothy Dalton's always fun.
Yep.
The guy who's playing the cowboy, I'm just going to feel embarrassed that I don't remember his name, is solid. Billy Piper's in there.
Yeah.
Playing a whore with...
I have heard her accent might be a little...
Her Irish accent is abominable.
A little better or worse than David Boreanaz's his accent in Buffy.
Worse, because at least you can understand David Boreanaz. She gets the Irish brogue so thick you can't understand her. And
I was going to say, she's English. I feel like she's a hop, skip, and a jump
I know.
From Irish.
It's so bad. And she's overacting. When they do the play episode, she's acting like it's the most amazing thing she's ever seen. And I get it's supposed to be that this character is so poor she's never seen
right.
Gaudy things like this, but she's overacting it.
Right.
And it's embarrassing. it is. Billy Piper is not at her best in this show. But it's, I don't know, it's got moments I really, really like. And I hear a lot of people say that season two is great. And what I want to know is season two great because you like season one, or is season two like a notable uptick? And I got to find that out before I
right.
go on with more.
Like, you know, that was sort of the common thing I heard about Arrow is mm-hmm. that season two is a notable uptick.
Sure.
And not just it didn't. Necessarily, like, I think even at one point you suggested I just jump to season two.
I did, and I generally do. I think season one has a lot to offer. It's a lot of grounding, but I do think season two is a notable jump. And if Penny Dreadful is the same way, I might go to season two. I just, there's so much else to watch
right.
that I sort of found myself
right now,
forcing.
It's not real high on the list.
Yeah, I found myself forcing through it because people had recommended it, and I was like, that's not doing it for me.
Yeah.
That said,
Dreadful is dreadful.
A lot of people like it, and if this sounds up your alley, you might check it out. It's on Showtime.
Yeah.
Finally, a show I did not expect to like, but I marathoned all 12 episodes yesterday.
Holy
shit. Yeah. It's half-hour episodes.
Yeah.
But it's a show called BoJack Horseman
on
Netflix.
I've heard lots of buzz about this.
So I watched the first episode of the first season
yeah.
and thought, well, that was weird.
Yeah.
But it didn't really impel me to go on. BoJack Horseman is about a human with a human horse-headed hybrid. So these, there are a lot of animal hybrids in this world.
Uh-huh.
That's just the way it is. Just
accept its strange.
Accept its strangeness. He's a dude with a horse head. He's part horse. You know, his big break in season 2 is he's playing secretary in a big movie. He was on this 80s or this 90s sitcom called Horsin' Around, where he was sort of the goofy, cool uncle to this 80s family, or this family.
Okay.
And so he still hangs out with the now-grown kids who are actors all screwed up in various ways. He is sort of a washed-up actor who had his money, so has a big, nice house, but can't, you know, he's arrogant, he's sort of clueless. It's very much a Hollywood spoof.
Okay.
His agent is played by Amy Sedaris. Oh, Will Arnett is the voice, by the way.
And that sounds ideal for the kind of character you're describing.
Amy Sedaris is his agent. She's a cat. Her name is Princess Caroline,
mm-hmm.
because why not? his other big thing, there's a guy voiced by Paul F. Tompkins, the comedian Paul F. Tompkins, Mr. Peanut Butter, who was a dog on a show very similar to Horsin' Around, and he's sort of more popular and more upbeat and friendly, and he's like the nemesis slash friend who is dating and engaged to the biographer in the first season of BoJack Horseman, a woman named Diane Wynn, who's a human. She's just human. That's the way it is. And she's voiced by Alison Brie.
This sounds like, what do you call it? Like, it sounds like satire by way of internet strangeness.
Yeah, I would say that. It's got a little bit of that, what the critic did way back when, you know, sort of that Hollywood, inside Hollywood baseball, sort of making fun of that. Along with the weirdness of there being animals, I mean, they do, like, they occasionally just show in an interstitial where a bird baby will fly out of a carriage because it's a bird baby. The voice cast is stunning. You cannot imagine the number of voices, whether it's a one shot or an ongoing.
Use a lot of sort of dialogue-y humor, like sort of say Archer does.
Yeah, yeah, it reminds me of Archer in some ways.
Yep.
It is very much not for kids.
Right.
Not safe for work. Like nope. There's so much craziness that BoJack is a horrible, irresponsible person. Yet you sort of kind of want to root for him because he's you feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Aaron Paul plays his human roommate, who is sort of a slacker roommate who lives – his Kato Kaelin, who lives at his house.
Yeah. But you said the first episode didn't really completely grab you.
First episode of the first season didn't, and then everyone was talking about the second season. So I just jumped ahead.
Oh, okay.
I just watched the second season.
Okay. A perfect example of what we were just talking about.
Perfectly good. I will probably go back and watch the first season at some point, but
knowing what you know about the second season.
Now that I know the second season was good, and I just kept watching it. It just partly because I want to talk about it on the podcast and I wanted to be caught up. But
it was not a strain.
No, it was great. It was really, really funny.
They didn't have to hook you up to the Clockwork Orange machine.
They did not. I did just because.
You know,
because the flesh is weak. But no, it's really funny, and there's tons of laugh out loud moments. Like I say, just you would not believe the voice cast. Sir Paul McCartney appears in for 5 minutes as himself, as does Lance Bass as a bass. He's Lance Bass. And Ethan Hawke. I think you can imagine what Ethan Hawke was.
Trying to bring in all the Hollywood actors with clear animal names.
Yes. It's hilarious and weird and definitely recommended if you like hilarious and weird.
We should post a link to a clip of it or something.
I'll see if I can find something. That wraps up Randy's TV corner.
Yep.
And
I believe that they could hear more about this in your TV Dudes podcast at, should they so desire.
At thetvdudes.com. Yep. Yes. All right. That'll wrap it up for us this time. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. And until next time,
yo Joe.
Thanks for Nick.
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.